Well, welcome back to Good Oil for Penrite today. Penrite Oil is Australian known and trusted for more than 90 years. You can visit penriteoil.com. Jeremy Howe to join us this hour. Nick Riewoldt is in the studio, as he always is. And I just saw Joe Root claim a catch that took Marcus Labuschagne out. Smelly. G'day, Rui.
Cheat, you called him.
I didn't call him a cheat. I said it looked very suspect to me. And on first viewing of it, welcome to you.
Thank you. Just recovering.
On the back of a big day yesterday.
Wow, what a big day it was.
Wasn't it? Wasn't it just? There were some wonderful games of footy on the weekend and some absolute stinkers. What do you want to start with? The good?
Start with that first quarter yesterday.
Start with the good.
All right.
Start with the good. And at least the biggest build games, at least they delivered in
spades.
Almost over-delivered, didn't they, in terms of what we now have to look forward to as we look to September, because you would imagine those teams will all meet again in some sort of format in the first week of finals. That first quarter yesterday.
Unbelievable.
Incredible. Incredible.
Was that the highest standard of football you've seen this year?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all over the ground, the way and Richmond did pretty well to only come in as far behind as, because West Coast, it was almost a perfect quarter of footy, wasn't it? Really, they were able to be clean. They were able to be accurate. Their game plan. So both teams arrived with very, very contrasting styles and ways they wanted to play. But in the first quarter, it was West Coast plan that just stacked up, and Richmond, everything they tried to do, they tried to get their handball game going. West Coast defended really well in that first quarter, and a lot of their opportunities coming back and their looks coming back the other way were off the back of their defence.
So when you go in, you go, what did West Coast want? They want to take uncontested marks because they kick the footy.
Yeah, 35 in the first quarter.
So they're plus
35.
20-odd total in that. They want to get pressure on the opposition because they give you a look with the way they use the footy, and their forwards were pushing up really hard and chasing and tackling and turning the footy back over. And then they wanted to get their little fellas involved for the footy. And Darling was the outstanding player in that first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, he was rounding up the opposition's spare player, forcing the two-on-one, getting the footy to ground, and then little Willie went to work.
But Willie did. Cripps did. He was superb in that first quarter as well. Ryan flashed in and out of the game early. They were absolutely breathtaking. So they asked the question of Richmond straight away. And We haven't seen them challenge like that. We haven't seen anyone score on Richmond like that yet this year. And they answered a big question from then on. What Richmond showed yesterday is they can take a punch. They can take a punch straight in the mouth. West Coast came out. They gave them their best shot. And after quarter time, it was really for the next 60 minutes. Mm. It was a complete domination.
Yeah. The other thing in that first quarter, they had clearance at domination West Coast. So they had territory. And territory became the key sort of focus of the match. Once they went inside forward 50, that was okay. Once it went in Richmond's forward 50, that was sort of game over. They couldn't exit, couldn't get it out. When they did exit, it was intercept marking of mainly Grimes, but Asprey and Floston and Hooley.
Yeah, that was the key for Richmond. They just starved West Coast of opportunities because they were so efficient in that first quarter and really throughout the game, because the first quarter, they had 17 inside 50s. They were able to kick 7-1, so very, very efficient scoring. They only had 27 more inside 50 opportunities for the rest of the game. And a lot of those came in the last quarter as well, late in the contest. So Richmond's ability to set up that wall, and this is where their unique style comes in. They were able to set up that wall across half forward and just keep repeat inside 50 after repeat. They had that, plus they had the deep, deep sweeper in Grimes for the majority of the game. Mm. And West Coast just, they did not look like they could score.
With Grimes allowing him to play that way, Gary, they've got to give up something, the West Coast Eagles, which is their spare player at the other end of the ground.
Richmond have to give up.
No, West Coast do that. If they man up Grimes, they've got to give up something to man up Grimes, okay?
Yeah.
So they obviously didn't want to do that. In the end, the margin's only 6 points.
Yeah.
They did in the end, though. It evened up in the end in the last 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and that's when both sides started scoring more freely. My argument against it was that they had an extra at the stoppage and they were still losing clearances, so they weren't getting an advantage anywhere else. So why not even it up? That was just my argument.
Particularly in the conditions, because the first half it was played in beautiful sunshine. The conditions were absolutely perfect. And we've often spoken this year in the last few years about – the state of the game and the competition's too diluted and we don't have class, you know, like we used. When you see good teams filled with good players, football in the first quarter yesterday, that is as good as it can possibly look. It was just a great advertisement for the game. But you're right, once the rain came and that opportunity to play pretty perfect footy where you chain out with hands, there was no point having the extra number at the stoppage.
So the bottom line is this. Let's just say overcast, not much rain, maybe a splattering on grand final day and these two teams are playing. Which system stacks up best? That's what we've got to work out.
Yeah.
And that's what every team will be working, thinking about over the next few weeks.
I still think Richmond. I still think Richmond because I just think less can go wrong. And that's why I've been big on them and called them, you know, sort of 6 weeks ago, just because they are doing something that no one else in the competition is doing. And they've made a lot of teams look pretty ordinary. And they made West Coast for a period yesterday look ordinary.
They're playing a style of football, you mean?
Yeah, that's right.
No one else is playing.
They had that mechanism where they drop that deep, deep sweeper down and they're happy, they're content to allow an outnumber in any other part of the ground. Because if you win the footy, you've still got to come through that player, usually Grime stoppers, who sits deep 80 metres behind the play.
Gary, how did you read the battle last week? I mean, you've been big on Yo. Yo matches up against Dangerfield during the game. How do you read that battle between those two? I mean, in some papers, Martin was best player on the ground.
Dustin Martin was best player on the ground. No question about it. The comparison between the two, they started together and then that was it. But they didn't. There wasn't a hard tag. It was a nominal play on him. Martin goes one way, Yo goes the other. I watched it really closely because I was interested in it, and Martin had more impact on the game. In the end, after half time, Redden went to Martin. So Yo ends up with 26 touches, 18 contested, 15 clearances, and Dusty 35, 16 contested, 6 clearances. So Yo has an impact, not as big an impact. I mean, the rating points in the paper, Yo has 141 and Dusty has 135. Dustin was the most important. But I watched it carefully because I wanted to see what happened. When Dustin got in the groove, absolutely no interest in anyone or any defensive aspect of the game at all, which is fair enough. Ball goes into West Coast forward line. Yo and Redden push hard. Dustin totally ignores them. Walks to the middle of the ground and waits for the rebound and then gets involved again. And that's not a whack at him because he's got faith in the system that allows the ball to come back.
And that's part of the mechanism. I'm sure that's part of the reason it's set up that way. Yeah, and that's why Kane Lambert's such a valuable player in that team, who had the tag from Hutchings early until he did a hamstring, and he was doing a pretty good job. Lambert wasn't winning a lot of the football, but he runs so strongly defensively that he, you know, same with Edwards, that he covers players. So they are a complementary team. You know, it's easy to sit there and, oh, well, Dusty doesn't defend, but he doesn't defend because he doesn't have to, and he knows that because the team is set up that way.
Right. They can bring Cochin into that side, so they can actually add further to what already is a really talented and deep midfield.
They can. Yeah. And Schofield was a laid out for West Coast, so they can add him and potentially Nat Nui.
Yeah.
Nat Nui is the difference maker.
He would make a difference.
He's the difference maker. What stood out with Dusty was, in a game that was at times, particularly when the rain came, that was it was so contested and in tight, his ability to break tackles and just burst out and get the ball into space, that really was the catalyst for their handball game, which had struggled. Really, the only time they got it going was when he was able to break tackles and then draw one or two and there was an overlap occurring.
Excellent. Let's take a break and get back to our other big one, the Lions and the Cats, and what you made of that. And also then we'll go to the bad side, which is a pretty ugly situation, but we need to talk about it. SEN Breakfast, the greatest luxury adventures on earth, are with Abercrombie and Kent. Some of the best golfers in the world arrive for the President's Cup, 9th to 15th of December at Royal Melbourne Golf Club. You'll hear them here on SEN. We've just spoken to the number one golfer in the world in Brooks Koepka, that well-organised interview. And we've also got Matt Kuchar sorted for you at 8 o'clock as well. He's just finished playing his final round of the BMW Championship in Illinois. Finished 4-under, but he's not in contention there, but he'll be a big part of that team. So,
Kuch,
look forward to having that chat. Nick Revolt's in the studio with us. The other big game on the weekend was, there was quite a few, but when Brisbane took on Geelong, we wanted to know whether the Cats could stand up or whether their form would hold up. They've been up and down, win-loss. They're going up for a really tough trip, and the last test Brisbane had up there, real big test, was round 5 that they failed badly against the Magpies. They were magnificent. It was a seesawing contest, low scoring, boundary hugging, conservative style.
Boundary hugging? The ball went over the boundary about 150 times. That's how boundary hugging it was.
That's what I mean. But then when it got to sort of three goals with about 5 or 10 minutes to go, Brisbane said, righto, slip the
ball. Got to score.
Let's go.
So how would you answer the question? How would Geelong's form stack up, first of all?
Well, stacked right up until a minute and a half to go against a team who were as in form as anyone in the comp. So Chris Scott will be just quietly happy with what happened.
He was very salty after the game.
He was salty. That's a good word. It's a very good word. He was salty when it came to Charlie Cameron, who kicked 5 goals and was one of the most influential players on the ground, but not according to him.
Why does a coach do that after the game?
Well, some... they don't like losing, some coaches, and they can't separate that sometimes.
Let's have a listen to Chris Scott first.
Did you think Charlie was the difference today? I thought he was good late, kicked a couple of goals. I don't think he had a huge influence on the game, but that's my initial reaction. I thought he took his chances when they were presented, but no, even if I had a plan, would I tell you?
He took his chances. He did. He took them 5 times. And he was the difference between the two sides because he was able to do that.
Yeah. That being said, when you were a player, did you walk off the ground sometimes and find it very difficult to know who had actually played well?
Yep.
Yeah.
Most times.
Was that the same in your experience as a coach?
No, I think as a coach you're more aware because you're getting a lot of feedback throughout the course of the afternoon. But you know, a lot of things went pretty right for Geelong at the weekend.
Dangerfield was magnificent.
He was. You know, late in the game, the fact that they didn't have a recognised ruckman really, I thought, hurt them because they were able to hit the ball from the stoppage, get some clear air, and then McCluggage's last quarter was just outstanding. And I know he's had a great year, McCluggage, but it just his ability to be able to move the ball. Lockie Neal, we know how good Lockie Neal is, but it was tighter. He can play with a bit of space, Lockie Neal, and he can play a great game inside as well. And he hunts the ball like the best midfielders in the competition.
What's great about their midfield is that they've got Zorko's a similar type player. He can play on the outside, he can play on the inside. So depending on who's copping attention, who's in great form within the game, they can move all those pieces around too. They've got a really, really deep midfield.
Been a really good addition to the team in Marcus Adams. So he's come back and shored up that defence. Yeah. So in Adams and Harris Andrews, just real quality defenders.
Mm. Gardner's a very good defender too.
Gardner went and played on Ablett and did a good job. Then you go forward of the footy. So you've got Hipwood and McStay as your two mains. And this is the area where you start to think, okay, if they're vulnerable anywhere, are they going to perform 4 weeks in a row in September? With Charlie Cameron at their feet, you know that's a worry. Midfield is beautifully served. So can they win it? They can, for sure. The concern would be the key forward posts at this stage.
Yeah. I reckon they've got two great games in the lead up, though. That one that they played at the weekend, and then this weekend against Richmond too. It's another searching test to all parts of their game.
It's a much bigger test, in my mind. The way Richmond, again, the way they set up, this is going to pose a really significant question to Brisbane's coaching panel.
A lot of people think you've got your blinkered when it comes to Richmond coming
That's
through
fine. That's
they,
fine.
And Nick, with all respect, don't Brisbane largely play the sweeper in Hodge? That's Pauline Cranbourne.
Not the same way. Not at the expense of giving up an extra number around. I'm not talking about an extra number around the ball with Richmond. Richmond are happy to concede an extra number forward of the ball, but you can still win that ball, and you've got to go. So this is completely unique. No one else in the competition is doing that. And we watch a lot of vision. We watch it behind the goals. We get a much different look at the game.
When you say concede another number forward of the ball, just explain exactly
so
what it is.
So if the ball is in the middle of the ground. Yesterday at times, West Coast had an extra man, a kick away in the attacking part of the ground for West Coast.
Right. And that direct opponent was even further.
He was deeper. He was another 40 or 50 metres further away from him. So call it Kennedy and Grimes. Mm. That wasn't always it. But Kennedy could take a mark uncontested 40 metres from the stoppage. But even if he does that, he's still got to then kick it through Grimes, who's the deepest. So West Coast, they love to get you up and then beat you out the back with those. They couldn't do it yesterday because Richmond were playing that way. So Charlie Cameron loves to get you up and then beat you out the back. That you can't beat Richmond out the back with the way they set up. So this is a different test.
It is, and it'll be a very stern test.
Hey, Fagan after the game, that was awesome, wasn't it?
Spoke about it. It was magnetic.
Great vision.
Yeah, it just sort of got the better of him and spilled out where he'd been trying to keep a nice lid on it for the whole year. It just went, boom, blew off, and he just bolted out there. The Cats didn't lose any fans. They and they were there right at the death. They lost the game in the end.
They got scoring power too. Like, you know, Myers and Ablett didn't have his greatest day, but he's a smart player still. We know that forward of the ball. Dangerfield was unbelievable again. So they got still probably close to the best midfielder in the competition. I still, you know, like Hawkins, Radigalia almost...
Harris Andrews did a number on Radigalia.
He almost does stuff, but you'd have to think that Hawkins needs a bit more assistance in the final month of football for Geelong to go all the way.
Well, Gary Rowan, when he was up and going really well early in the season, their full forward line does not look anywhere near as balanced as it did early in the season. When Ablett was in super form, Gary Rowan was playing career best footy, so... Yeah, they've still got some gears to go to.
They've got a big decision to make too, and that is, do they go without a ruckman, without a recognised ruckman? Do they go with blitz halves again? I think Chris Scott's gone on the record as saying the best place for blitz halves is part of the back six. What do they do now in the final round of football? Do they go back and try Stanley or do they try Smith again?
They play Carlton this weekend.
That's going to be another big game.
Which would be nice. It'd be a good challenge for them. And then... just say results go the way we think, they probably play Richmond in the first week of the finals. Now, can they afford to play blitz halves in the ruck when you got Revolt and Lynch?
No, I don't think they can.
If that's the case, then they're going to have to play a ruckman this week.
And if you're playing West Coast, you've got the same issue with Kennedy and Darwin.
Of course. It's interesting. You know, the other one that's, we restricted by time, Western Bulldogs bashed into the eight. They've just stormed into the eight. They win this weekend against Adelaide Crows and just say yes and then lose to Collingwood, which, you know, in ladder position happens. They're going to finish seventh. They're going to play the Giants probably in the first week of the finals.
Yeah.
They've just made a mess of the Giants.
Yeah, and we've almost been cheering for the Western Bulldogs and Port Adelaide to a certain extent to get there, because up until the weekend, those two teams... outside the top four, those two teams looked the most likely to be able to... cause some real damage if they got there. Mm. So if they got there, they were going to get there because they needed to win out. They were going to get there in great form because they just needed to win their last four or five. So Port Adelaide they've done a number on themselves, but the Western Bulldogs now, they're the ones that if they can scrape in this week against Adelaide and find themselves in a final, well then...
Finished seventh. You know where they won the flag from?
Oh, I do. I do, Gary. Bevo doesn't like the comparisons, but it's similar. It's very, very similar.
Got a midfield that's just absolutely cranking out
dominant
huge numbers,
midfield,
playing at a big tempo. They've now got forwards that can convert. They didn't have that earlier in the year.
They run off half-back. I mean, they create rebound-type goals. They create stoppage goals. They create turnover goals. At the moment, they've got all bases covered. Almost like a complete team. And they've got pace on the outside too.
And they play a unique style with the footy that if you are off a little bit defensively, they make it really, really difficult on you. If we've got the big four, so I think Richmond, West Coast are the one and two seeds despite being three and four on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
And then call Brisbane, Geelong the 3-4 seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are the Bulldogs the fifth best team?
Well, you're discounting Collingwood now.
Magpies, and so what you thought about them?
Oh, I've got the...
You've got Collingwood behind the Bulldogs now.
At the moment.
Ooh, they showed a little bit again. Yeah. I know opposition wasn't
Depends
great.
Who they get back.
Forward line starting to... I thought last week their forward line against poor opposition showed some signs. Elliott kicking five means they've all had a little feed at the trough. They need DeGoey and Stevenson.
They got...
If they can get them all back, well, then
more back this week.
Yeah, he's important. Mm. He's really important to them. They needed this, didn't they?
Yeah, you take what the opposition give you, and they gave them plenty of latitude, Adelaide, at the weekend, and they went to town on them.
It was more that their game style that we've... You know, it's been a long time since they've been able to score from turnover and do the things that the really good teams in the competition do. So they absolutely needed it.
That's glass half full. If you don't want to hear negative stuff, maybe walk away because I've got news headlines and then we're going to have to talk about some very inept performances. We've got Nick for the full hour, so it's hard to get through every game. Carlton and St Kilda was a great game of footy from what I could see from the television atmosphere, 50,000. Carlton's fans have voted with their feet. They love what they're doing. And I think the rest of the footy world love what they're doing too. Next year's going to be a pretty exciting year.
Exciting. Imagine if they're able to add some more pieces over the summer.
We'll try Charlie Curnow for a start.
Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're the pieces they already have.
Mm. Wietering and Jones.
Without the pieces that they potentially will get from other football clubs.
Yep, no, that was a beautiful thing to watch. We'll talk about them more throughout the course of the morning. There were four teams, Melbourne, Port Adelaide, Giants and the Adelaide Crows. Which of those were the worst? And good luck sorting those out. In order, I want them.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Port.
Worst.
Yep. But based on what they've been able to deliver the last few weeks, what they're capable of. But again, you say what they're capable of. They've been the ultimate Jekyll and Hyde of the footy season this year. They are really young. So finding that consistency of performance, it's tough when you're a younger player. And that comes with experience and being in the system a long time and understanding how difficult it is to back up week after week after week. But I just thought with everything that was on the line for them and the form that they'd been in, they were the good things to come over here. They did it 2 weeks ago against Essendon, smashed them. I thought they'd repeat that dose, but they were pathetic.
Are they marginally ahead of Adelaide's performance at home against Collingwood? There's so much to play for.
Yeah, marginally ahead.
The reason those two are...
They were both really disappointing.
And Melbourne, on Friday night, you didn't think there'd be another team that could go worse than Melbourne did Friday night. The difference was that those two teams had finals to play for.
That's what it is. It's because of the stakes. So how you cannot show up, because that's what it is. When there are results like that... Now, all players show up to try, but there's trying and then there's really trying and then the lack of effort once the game is gone. So the scoreboard dictating how you play the rest of the game out, that was what was most frustrating for both of those football clubs.
You look at Melbourne, I mean, there's so many different ways you can slice Melbourne, but how disruptive is it late in the season when coaches have been given their marching orders? You know, they're part of the coaching panel still. They've been given their marching orders. The players aren't playing for anything. You're down the bottom of the ladder. That mood that descends upon a football club, how difficult is that to shift from that to go into the positive mind frame to play a game of football? Like, they were expected to play on Friday night against not one of the great teams of the competition either in Sydney.
Carlton have managed.
Yeah, they're on the rise in a different way, aren't they?
Yeah, but so are Melbourne, really.
Jake Lever said...
What have Melbourne done?
Well, they've done nothing. Jake Lever said pre-game, though, after the bye, they reset. What is it that they reset, Melbourne?
Well, they reset the coaching panel, didn't they? They made the moves in the coaching panel.
Yeah.
They
changed what they were doing forward of the footy, basically. They went from the worst team in converting scores inside 50 to number one, believe it or not, in 4 weeks. That's the only thing, though. I mean, the rest of it was wallpapering, you know, and wallpapering over not only cracks but things that have rocked the foundations, because they were, in the end, had... looked like they'd forgotten how to play.
Have they got a? They played against a team that has a system and has been playing a system-based football for a long time. The Sydney Swans, who are a very good contested ball side as well, they hunt really well. It's not apparent when you watch Melbourne play.
And Simon Goodwood,
that they're playing a system.
He admitted as much, that there is nothing identifiable about the way Melbourne go about playing their footy at the moment.
That's the biggest admission right there. Yeah. That's your story right there from a Melbourne point of view. They tinker, we'll get the grab for you. They tinker with stuff, they change stuff.
And they've lost themselves because of that.
Yeah, and they don't know what they stand for. And that's the way they play. You don't know whether they're a contested ball team, you don't know whether they're fast going forward, you don't know whether they're a slow, composed team. They don't have any of that.
So there's that, but then there's the stuff that you just see as well, which cuts against the grain of having a strong sense of spirit as a team, giving great effort. I mean there were things on Friday night that you could see from Melbourne players that you just thought, gee, where's this group at as a group? They are not playing as a unit. They don't look like they're enjoying playing together. You know, seeing Clayton Oliver spray his teammate, Bailey Fritch, after he's just hit a teammate up inside 50 for not giving him the ball. It's all that sort of stuff that makes you think that they're in survival mode at the moment.
Now, the great mystery for me, and obviously I'm trying to work it out as much as anyone. I can't work it out. But the great mystery for me, for a side who are so poor, win inside 50 again by 10. So you win inside 50 by 10 again. It's the pattern. So you're doing something within the game right that gives you the opportunity to score. So they've beaten Sydney by 10 inside 50. They've lost by 54
points. Do you
reckon
it's a bit of personnel? So Brayshaw, Viney, Oliver and Jones, they are combined for 30% of their inside 50s.
Yeah. But the, irrespective of how it gets in there,
yeah, but
it gets in there.
So the methodology is wrong, though.
Yeah, but and you, well, you want the right blokes making the right decisions and being able to execute as well.
So those guys are
Friday
making.
Night, you wouldn't say those blokes are surgeons with the footy.
No, you wouldn't. On Friday night, you're shooting to Bailey Fritch on Dane Rampey.
That's right.
You talk about personnel. You can have Darren Jarman using the footy. Ain't going to get it to Bailey Fritch on Dane Rampey.